This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Hey, today's podcast is all about you, listening to people all over the country, what they're dealing with, and so much more. I think you will really get a lot out of today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Gray is joining us just for a quick second because he knows something about inflation because he has a cookie company called Kexi Cookies, and they are heavy in, let's say, butter.
You could say that. Some butter in them.
Yeah, you don't want to eat them while outside because it could congeal in your bloodstream, and that would not be good. I wanted to talk to you about what are you seeing in inflation?
A lot of inflation on virtually everything. Every ingredient has gone way up. And for the first, you know, it's been going on for like a year or more. And so for a long time, we just ate it. Mm-hmm. We just ate the difference. But eventually... You have to raise your price.
Have you raised your price?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
I know that kills you.
Yeah, it hurts. But then we raise the price to include shipping, though. And shipping is probably, it's one of the most expensive aspects of
it. Yeah, it is.
But between the ingredients and the shipping, it's inflation really hurts. When butter goes up, when sugar goes up, when eggs go up, all that stuff goes into the cookies.
I was telling Stu, I went into a Costco and I picked up five steaks, you know, just a pack of five steaks.
Mm-hmm.
They were $80.
Yeah.
80.
Yeah, I know.
I was like, what, are you kidding me?
I know.
I mean, it's real. They are becoming golden calves again.
We have a tradition that on Christmas Eve, we buy one of those steak roasts.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
It's a rib steak.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, so good.
Yeah.
And usually they're a lot. But this year, they're, I don't know, $300 or something.
Oh, my gosh.
So we're just, I mean, we're going to get kibbles and bits this year.
Christmas Eve. I can afford, you know, inflation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even I backed away. I mean, I don't know how the average person is having meat right now.
Yeah. It's one of those things, too. Even if you can afford it, it's a value proposition, right? Like, do I really want to spend $80 on five steaks?
No.
Like, even if you can afford the $80, it just seems insane.
Especially if, I mean, you better know you're going to eat them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or just put them in the freezer. Because sometimes,
well, why else are you buying steaks?
Well, because sometimes you'll think, I'm going to go out, you know, I'm going to have a steak on Monday or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then something comes up and then we don't have time to cook or we're going someplace. And then you forget about it. And by the end of the week, you're like,
the steaks are brown.
Can we eat that still?
No.
Now it's like, if you're getting meat, you better damn eat that meat.
Yeah, no doubt. And then you couple that with the gas prices, and I don't know how.
How are you getting to work? How are people getting to work?
I don't know.
Do you see that they're releasing more oil from the energy?
From the oil reserves?
Yeah. It didn't work the first time. It's not going to work this time. And when are you going to refill it?
Guys,
usually we refill when it comes down in price. It's not coming down in price. I love these people who just are pretending that this is meat and any kind of oil-based product is never coming back down as long as these people are in charge.
You guys are so out of touch.
Oh, really?
So out of touch. I mean, listen to you. Listen to this. You know, gas prices. Pete Buttigieg. On cut six here, kind of walks us through how you should deal with gas prices.
Okay, all right.
It's nice and easy.
Cut six.
Now there's talk about the Build Back Better Act, which is the quote-unquote human infrastructure. Are there things in that legislation that's now being cobbled together that is important to you as the Secretary of Transportation?
Absolutely, yes. Obviously, most of the physical infrastructure work was contemplated in the bill that was just signed, but there is more envisioned in the Build Back Better law. I'll give you one example. It contains incentives to make it more affordable to buy an electric vehicle, up to a $12,500 discount, in effect, for families thinking about getting an EV. Families that once they own that electric vehicle will never have to worry about gas prices again.
See? just buy a six-figure an electric car.
$125,000 Tesla.
Yeah.
Minus 14.5 or 12.5.
Okay. So you get it for $108,000 right now.
So $108,000. That is the average family car.
Yeah. And then you just have to drive it 108,000 miles. If it's a dollar per gallon, you might be saving because you still have to pay for the electricity. And of course, that's going up too.
Yeah.
But if you go through all of that, I mean, in a matter of multiple decades, you're going to make your money back.
I see. People don't understand that. You know, they're too simple-minded.
They're dumb.
Too simple-minded. Mm-hmm. You know, you say that energy is going up. The electricity price is going up. But is it really once we get rid of, you know, all of the coal electricity and all of the electricity?
No, it's going to be way cheaper once we get rid of that.
It is? Are you sure?
Filthy coal.
Okay.
Pretty sure. All right. I'm pretty sure that's how it works.
I thought the Build Back Better bill seemed like a scam to control everyone and to impoverish everyone. But you're not thinking that that's what that... No,
that's not what that's about.
There are ways to make sure solar panels and wind energy a lot more expensive than something like coal or natural gas. Yes.
And do they work as well? No.
No, of course not. No one's saying that.
Are we getting as much energy out of it? No.
But what if we pass another multi-trillion dollar bill that just takes money from people who are producing the economy and give it to people who would rather use that electricity, so we get the same or a more deficient product, but for just a little bit more money rather than a lot more? That is how you solve a problem in this country. Just subsidize the worse option.
You're talking common sense in Washington.
Yes,
you are.
Thank you.
I mean, a lot of people in Washington, D.C. are going, right? He gets it.
Right.
He
finally. Somebody on conservative radio saying the truth.
By the way, have you heard about the new Jack from Twitter?
Oh, the new CEO.
Yeah, the new CEO. We're going to talk about him coming up in a little while. He's fantastic.
He's good.
He's fantastic. Good. Have you gone to Twitter today?
I have not, no.
Okay, go to Twitter, because if you go to Twitter today, you'll see right at the top, they want you to know, hey, those things that the new guy in charge here said, those are taken out of context. He meant that as a joke.
Oh, yeah. It's what's happening. An old tweet from Parag Agrawal. Is that his name?
I love him.
It's a quote from a television show, and it's a satirical take on stereotypes, journalist report.
Journalists report.
As part of a panel on The Daily Show from October 26, 2010.
Which is why he didn't quote that it was from that, because he was just joking around. And what was supposed to be evident to all of us.
And I'm so glad to see they're setting the standard that when somebody says something as a joke, it's immediately at the top of everyone's Twitter feed.
Yes.
Hey, we want you to know this was a joke. I think that's a good standard.
Yeah.
That's a good standard.
It really is.
Again, also, you know, like, you don't have to quote every joke that happens on The Daily Show. You pick the one you really like and you think is really funny. Right. So when he said, if they are not going to make a distinction between Muslims and extremists, then why should I distinguish between white people and racists? He thought that really connected with him.
Yeah,
even if it's not his line.
Right.
You don't quote lines.
Still, what a great line.
Yeah. He thought it was
hilarious.
That's
what he's thinking.
And actually, if you look at it from the other side of the aisle, if you will, into fantasy land, crazy land, stupid land, really. Mm-hmm. If you look at that, that's a valid point. If you're not going to separate a Muslim from terrorists, which we always do, why should you expect anyone to say, well, a white person isn't a racist? That's true. Mm-hmm. That's not even funny. That's true. That's true. But what he's saying is that all white people will never, ever give Muslims a break. And so why don't we just say that all white people, which is not true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't seem like a good point to me. I will admit.
No, it's not one. It's not one that is gleefully said right. out loud
right.
in public.
Yes.
But if, from their point of view, it is right. So how he's offending, really, honestly, by saying that was a joke, he's offending everybody on the left. Because everybody on the left would go,
yeah.
Yeah, all right. White people do stereotype Muslims. Mm-hmm. Oh, they're all Neanderthals.
It is back from 2010, though, where maybe we made the distinction that some white people could not be racist. You know, back in those days, it was possible for someone with white skin to not have negative characteristics assigned to them, which, by the way, is the definition of racism.
Those were the dark ages, though. We now know that all white people are all racist.
Yeah. That's not, but that's not racist.
No.
What you just said.
No, no.
When you identify someone by skin color with negative characteristics, that's not racism.
Right.
Just so we are clear. That is, I guess, the old school definition of racism.
Oh, by the way, the guy who is in charge of the CRT classes and all of the, you know, all of the curriculum.
Yeah.
Yeah. In Virginia.
Got a new gig.
New gig in Houston.
Mm.
Yeah. In the Houston School District. Yeah.
Oh, geez.
Really? Yeah. Yeah. And he's going to be making sure that Houston is full of equity now.
Oh, that's good to hear.
So
that's wonderful.
People might not know that who are in Houston. Oops, have I said that out loud?
You did say it out loud.
You should probably check into this if you're in Houston, because they got rid of him in Virginia and he got a new job in Houston, Texas.
At a bigger school district.
Isn't that great?
Yay! Yay!
Let's see what the Houston parents do. All right, back in just a second. This is the best of the Glenn Beck program. I'm going to start with you on the phone. We're going to North Carolina and Matt. Hello, Matt. Welcome to the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, thanks.
You're welcome.
Glenn, I just wanted to say that I run a small shed shop that has turned into a kind of a small home company. Now we're not quite there completely, but I've done everything from modulars in between. And when I mean modulars, I mean climate controlled stick built 50-year homes. But as far as construction, I've watched it. I think right now we're about $6-7 a 2x4. I mean, it's gone up. It was up to $14 at one point. Now it's come back down. I own one franchise, by the way, that I bought with my combat pay from one of my last deployments. So I run my own show here. I'm kind of more of the pointer dog at this point and work in the sales side. But I've watched this inflation, and I've been trying to figure out what to do for homeless vets because we've got one of the highest per capita homeless vets in North America here outside of Asheville, North Carolina, where we've got one of the better VAs. So anyways, long story short, I got into the small home thing because I was asked every week, what does it take to turn one of these into a tiny home, these sheds? And I had to tell people, no. You can't do that. Don't tell me you're going to live in it or I can't sell it to you. Now, I'm personally in a combat infantry vet. I don't think the government should tell you what you can and can't do on your own property, but that's a whole other conversation.
Right.
The thing that I wanted to bring up here is the small home thing is here to stay. It's no longer a trend, and I don't mean tiny home. When you say tiny home, inspectors get upset because you're usually having to get a lot of stamps to approve the code. But we did our demographic test and looking at how many people are making money and what are they making. And I looked at the millennials and I looked at baby boomers and all that. And we still have, you know, what, over 75% of the money is controlled by the baby boomers. But they only make up, what, like 75 million, mm-hmm. like that. Now there's 96 million mm-hmm. baby boomers in the market. And a lot of them are still living with mom and dad. And so me being a millennial myself, just I'm a grandpa millennial. The world of trying to figure out how do you do this? I got three kids. You know, I never got political until I started having kids. It's amazing how that happens.
But, yeah, it is.
but no, the reality is this has got to be something that we figure out because housing prices have gone through the roof and Asheville area is one of the most sought after for retirement. We got all these people. Tens of thousands of people have moved here from New York and from Florida and from all over just trying to get out of the big cities. But also to retire here because we're close to the mountains and right in the mountains, really. And So I'm just watching this and trying to figure out what do we do, you know, as far as sustainable living. And I think one of the best things you can do is get out of debt. I mean, we sold our house, downsized, lived in a fifth wheel for a whole year so that we could get out of debt, and built a house that we just finished that's half the size of what we originally had. It's only 1,300 square feet. So, but the thing is, it's doable. And I just want to employ the audience. Getting out of debt is one of the biggest things that you can do because of what's coming. And most people aren't waking up, or they're too comfortable not thinking about, oh, I can't sell this house because I've had it for 100 years in the family or whatever. But I see the handwriting on the wall, and I really appreciate you articulating it the way you have over the last year, and throwing the stats and the facts out there and letting people realize we're not returning to normal. Lumber prices have not come back down. And, you know, this new normal, unfortunately, we're going to change. The pendulum swings, yes, but it's going to change. And the damage is done. I don't know if it's going to be undoable as far as the market. And we're poised for another 2008.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I watched.
More than that.
As a millennial, we watched the baby boomers lose, you know, a lot of my friends, older friends, lose big time in the market or in the real estate world. And we're not willing as millennials to do that. And we kind of value things a little bit differently. So it's weird when we were doing the floor plans to do the surveys and to see that, you know, baby boomers like the big rooms with, you know, a double bath off there. And, you know, my crowd would rather have a small living space and a huge entertainment area. I mean, it's just different priorities across the board.
Well,
but seeing what we make.
Matt, you are absolutely on the right track. You are really well informed. I thank you for your phone call. That is the best message you could give people right now. Couple things. One, get out of debt if you can. Getting out of debt. My grandfather always said the people who made money in the Depression are the ones who had money in the Depression, because most people just didn't have any money. And so the people who survived were the ones that could afford to buy things at dirt cheap prices. And people were happy to sell them at dirt cheap prices because they didn't have anything and they needed the money. But there is something different as well. We are living, we have lived for the last 20 years or so in what will be regarded as our own kind of roaring 20s. The houses that I see that are built here in Texas, and they've been built this way for really 10 years, 20 years, these giant, giant homes. I will tell you that I think that is the Great Gatsby home of the future. That is, those areas that have those big homes, I think they are going to be kind of a little like the Newport, Rhode Island homes. They're just not going to be, they're going to be set apart as a time period. The home itself is completely changing. If you have a home with a formal dining room and a formal living room, that's a thing of the past, because he's right. People don't, we're not living that way. We haven't lived that way since practically the turn of last century. But that's when the homes were designed, and everything is changing. And he's right again. People that are younger do not want these big homes. So when you have people my age downsizing because all their kids are gone and everything else, we downsize, who are we going to sell those homes to? Because those big homes, the ones that are up and coming, don't want those big homes. It is changing, and it's changing rapidly. I was telling Stu during the break that this week the podcast is with Andrew Yang, and I just recorded it yesterday. And he's fascinating. Now, he was the guy who ran for president as a Democrat. I don't know why. He's not really a Democrat. I mean, he, you know, he grew up a Democrat, but he doesn't believe in big government. He does believe in things like UBI, But we talked about that in the podcast.
Universal basic income.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. That's where everybody gets $1,000 every month, a check for $1,000 every month. And you cut all other services. Okay. Just everybody gets a check for $1,000 a month. I don't agree with that. However, we agree on the problem, and very few people. I'm trying to think of another way of saying this because I know I've said it before, and I wish people would listen. Very few people truly understand what we are on the threshold of. We are on the threshold right now. We are in it. I asked Andrew, are we in it right now? The Industrial Revolution, which changed us from a community of people that worked farms with our horses to the life that we have today, that Industrial Revolution took about 100 years to fully flip. And think of the changes. If you were in, let's say, 1850, just at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, and you're in 1850, and in a 10-year period, 1860 by the Civil War, all of the changes that happened from 1850 to 1950 happened by 1860.
Earth shaking.
People would be lost. They wouldn't know how to survive. They wouldn't know what to do. They barely understand the machines that they were to operate. That is exactly what is happening right now. And I've been telling you that the Industrial Revolution, that 100-year period, is going to be compressed into a 10-year period, and you're not going to like it. And people are going to be, the upheaval is going to be remarkable. And I talked to Andrew Yang about it, and he said, you're exactly right. And I said, I think we're at the end, the beginning of this. I think we're in that 10-year period. And he said, yes, we are. And he again expressed kind of this frustration that I just expressed. How do we get people to understand this? Because if you don't understand the technology of tomorrow, if you don't understand AI and at least AGI, you don't understand what they're actually working on for robotics, you have no idea what's coming. I mean, he brought up the call centers. Anybody working a call center? Google now has your call center, and it will be better than a human. Have you done a computerized call center?
I feel like I have, maybe. I mean, it's tough because I go back and forth on this because some of the stuff is so bad. I mean, they can't recognize what you're saying. Some of it
is really
it's getting
good.
A lot better.
Yeah. So call centers, he said that right now, Google has call center technology that will cut all of those call center jobs. And he said that's ready right now. Hmm. And he said it's really good. All of our jobs are going to be at stake. This upheaval is happening, and it's going to happen in the banking sector. This is what Build Back Better is really all about, but they're not telling you. What they're telling you is we have a golden opportunity to change the world, and so we're going to do it by 2030. In a 10-year period. And in 10 years, you won't own anything and you'll like it. How do you get a country and a whole Western culture that is based on ownership? How do you change that in a 10-year period? Massive, massive upheaval. Now, I'm going to take a quick break, and then I want to come back and I want to tie this back to the original statement about buying a home. You're trying to buy a home. You're trying to sell your home. Well, if you're trying to buy a home right now, especially in a place like Texas, which one of my new employees is, she can't find one because she was just outbid by $75,000.
You know, you're used to, you know, okay, I'll give you $5,000 more. I'll give you $3,000 more. No, this person, quote unquote, came in with $75,000 over the asking price. Well, they're out. Who does that? Build Back Better. Now, here's something new that is happening. Almost one in every five U.S. homes sold in the third quarter of this year was purchased by an investor entity rather than an individual that is looking to live in or rent out the residence. Think of that. One in every five homes that have been sold are going to a big investment firm. Investors bought more than 90,000 homes totaling more than $63 billion, representing 18% of all homes sold in the quarter. The numbers broke all records. Increasing home prices fueled by intense housing shortage have created opportunities for investors to reap big profits. These same factors have pushed more Americans to rent, which also creates opportunities for investors because investors typically turn their homes they purchase into rentals and now can charge higher rents. Rent for single family homes surged by more than 10% in 12 months through September, the fastest annual rent inflation in 16 years. Nearly 77% of all homes were bought in an all cash transaction. 77% purchased in an all cash transaction. That's not your average person. And these investment firms, like BlackRock, are going in and buying entire neighborhoods. They are the people that come in and say, I'll give you $75,000 over the asking price. I don't care. I don't want to play around. We'll just buy it. And they'll pay these exorbitant costs. Now, that doesn't make any sense. We're at the top of a market. Why would investment firms think that they are going to just be able to make money on paying something $75,000 over the asking price? What is it they know that you don't know? They know, as the Great Reset states, that by 2030, you will own nothing and you'll like it. You'll rent. Well, that implies someone owns something and you're paying Mr. Potter in the end to live in Pottersville. This is exactly what happened in It's a Wonderful Life. That was the choice. Is the big guy who has money, is he going to come in and swoop in when there's problems and buy up everything and then make them rental houses or make these people enslaved to him for profit? That's exactly what's happening, and it's all happening in the name of equity. But I don't think it means the same kind of equity they think. It's money equity. This is the Great Reset. So now how do we solve this? We ask Americans to do what I think is damn near the impossible. Because if somebody comes in and offers $75,000 for your house, $75,000 over asking price, are you going to say no? Most likely, no. Most likely, you'll be like, $75,000, that changes everything for us. But the only way to stop this is to not sell to these big investors. You have to send the money, or you have to send the message. No, I actually care about the little people, not you, who's just gobbling up my whole town. No. It's going to be hard. But literally, I have an employee that cannot find a house within any sane distance from our studios. Cannot find a house to buy because they're all being gobbled up. There's a problem. If we leave the little people behind, you know,
the normal people, we don't have a very safe and secure country anymore. We have to try to convince each other and hold each other's hands. We're in this together. Don't grab for the cash.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
All right. Speaking of Frank Sinatra, you know where there is not a picture of Frank Sinatra? In the Cuomo house.
Oh. there might be one.
Well, they might like one, but they probably had to buy it.
Yeah, Frank didn't come by.
Yeah.
No. Although he may have spent some time with Mario, I got to say, back in the day. It's very possible.
Yeah, Mario. Mario is a different story. Mm-hmm. Chris.
Ooh. This is, I started off with the Andrew Cuomo thing. And Andrew Cuomo was awful.com and thought to myself, there's no way that he's going to get thrown out of office because I am a pessimist.
Right.
You know, I just, even though he obviously deserved to be thrown out of office.
And maybe a little jail time.
Perhaps.
A little jail time.
You know, when you happen to kill thousands of old people, generally speaking, that's the outcome.
You do go to jail.
However, in this case, no. I don't think he's going to prison. Yeah, it's possible. Yeah. He wound up getting thrown out, you know, kind of more related to the sexual harassment part of his incredible
Which is
legacy.
So much more important than the killing of old people.
Yeah, both are important, but the killing of old people usually, you know, just the whole life and death thing tends to outweigh almost anything.
Really
you
does, but not in his case. Yes. Anyway,
he was, of course, thrown out of office.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things that popped out of that little scandal was Chris Cuomo's assistance in the matter. And I said this, you know, a bunch of times. People kind of gloss over it, but the first words you heard from Andrew Cuomo about this scandal that CNN was covering in real time, they were covering the Andrew Cuomo scandal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When he made that speech, those words were written by Chris Cuomo. That is known. Chris Cuomo was writing speeches that his own network were covering out of the mouth of his brother if it was news.
But
their own host was writing the news.
But they knew that.
I don't think they knew it at the time. Now, that did come out.
I noticed the pause there. I don't think they knew it at the time because there is slight doubt that maybe they knew it.
It's one of those things that they didn't know it on the record at the time.
Right,
how about that?
Okay, yeah.
Now, they may have known it at the time.
Plausible deniability.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's interesting about this is that more and more detail has come out.
Mm-hmm.
And we, of course, saw multiple statements by Chris Cuomo on the air.
Correct.
Where he addressed and said things that he did do and that he did not do.
Yeah.
Stuff like he did not use sources, for example,
exactly
to go after the women who were accusing
reprehensible.
Reprehensible.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, they released some texts from Andrew Cuomo or from Chris Cuomo directly to Melissa DeRosa, who is the top aide/henchman of Andrew Cuomo.
And what did they say?
Well, he said he was using his sources to get information on women who were accusing.
Huh. Isn't that what he told CNN that he wasn't doing?
He didn't
doing?
Do. Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And in fact, the quote one of the women, it's going to be very difficult for the average person to keep track of all of the women that made accusations against Andrew Cuomo and Chris Cuomo, who was also accused, and that just seemed to have gone away completely. But Andrew Cuomo was accused by a woman who did not accuse him of some of the criminal type stuff that went on with some of the other accusers, but accused him of making her feel uncomfortable, grabbed her bare back, pulled her in for an unwanted kiss forcefully in front of cameras. There's cameras, there's video of this occurring.
Don't believe your eyes.
Now, she was at a wedding. This was at a wedding.
Yeah.
A woman who did not know Andrew Cuomo, but just was like a supporter and a fan, wanted to meet him. And then he, of course, took advantage of that situation because he's a piece of...
No tongue.
No.
But go ahead.
So this accusation comes out.
Mm-hmm.
3 days later, Chris Cuomo texts Melissa DeRosa, the aide, and says, "I have a lead on the wedding girl."
Could have been a completely different wedding girl.
Could have been. Maybe they needed a girl at a wedding and he was looking to book someone.
May have been the flower girl.
Of course, what he says is no, he was checking with his sources, but just trying to understand when new information might be coming out, not trying to dig up dirt at all. Not at all.
So what are the Vegas odds on him losing his job with CNN?
They've changed. They've changed.
They have
changed. The tide is turning, just like it did with Andrew. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, Chris has committed all sorts of various sins against journalism, and against CNN. And I want to be clear here. I don't think CNN has any journalistic integrity when it comes to Chris Cuomo.
Oh, no, I can guarantee zilch. That. No, I...
There is a part, though, at some point, a person embarrasses you so often, so dramatically, that you feel like you need to take steps.
Huh.
And CNN has now announced...
you think that CNN is at that point?
Well, let me clarify, because you will have insight in this, and I hope... I hope you are discreet in the way that you talk about this.
Okay.
Is what I will say.
All right.
So
probably not going to happen.
Probably not.
Yeah. All
right. This is a little bit of a risk. So
pretty great risk.
We're out of the limo a little bit here.
All right. Today. Go ahead.
So first of all, CNN has launched another investigation.
Another investigation.
They're going to go look through all of these texts and see what Chris has done.
Yeah, all over it.
There's a bunch of stuff in there. We can't go through all of it at the moment. But I will say... if they are honest, obviously, they would fire this guy.
They're not honest.
Not only has he broken every journalistic rule and made a mockery of journalism, he also has lied to his employer multiple times and embarrassed them multiple times. And in addition to this, does a terrible television show. And CNN should look at this as a blessing from God to get out of the contract. Right? Like, just as an excuse... Just fire him because you could say, gosh, we didn't know he was so bad. Save your money.
What you were saying here is that somebody in the hallway should go, right? Moral turpitude. Yeah. Aren't you glad that's in the contract?
Right, exactly.
Right, okay.
Now, I want to take a step that I think you're going to understand here. Mm-hmm. Maybe not the entire audience will understand the specifics, but let me explain the generalities.
I can't wait.
So you watch cable news. You might be a fan of cable news.
Right.
And you see the hosts have on great guests from time to time. Glenn Beck comes on a show. You're like, wow, I like when Glenn Beck comes on the show. He's a big famous talk show host, has a lot to say.
Right.
He's pretty interesting. And then the next guest comes on and you're like, wow, that person is a real expert in their field. And I understand why they're on. And then every once in a while, someone like Jeffrey Toobin comes on the air.
Mm.
Here's a guy who is in the middle of a Zoom call. Mm-hmm. And whips the thing out and goes to town and is back on the air in like a couple of months. It's just a weird thing. Normally speaking, that would not be the case. And you might
say... Well, because it does make everybody a little uncomfortable when you're like, isn't that the guy who was playing with himself?
Yes.
Yes.
And when he tries to say, oh, can you believe what an idiot this person was?
Yeah,
it's hard to take him seriously, right?
A little difficult.
It is so difficult.
Right.
And you might say, why does that happen? And you'll notice it particularly with legal analysts on cable news channels. Okay. Jeffrey Toobin, back on the air. Odd, right? And a lot of people chalk that up to, oh, well, he's liberal. Okay, that might be part of it. But let me propose another.
I'm beginning to think I might know a story that you don't want me to tell.
Right.
Okay.
And maybe multiple
stories. Okay, right.
So what happens often at cable news networks is there are lots of executives who work there.
Mm-hmm.
And they have issues... in their own personal lives, which need legal attention. And it's sometimes convenient to pull in a legal expert who happens to work for the channel up to your office to have a little conversation and throw out maybe a little personal legal conversation, a little consultation off the books in a normal, friendly way. And often
might even be incentive to keep their mouth shut on things that they've done by just having them. Hey, you should be famous.
Yeah, maybe you should come. What if we book you on all these shows all
right.
the time?
Yeah, that's crazy.
And that's good because really your legal analysis is important. And let me ask you this question on the side about my personal life that's sensitive. And so often, and I know no specifics here, of course, but... sometimes these legal experts have a way of worming their way into these networks because they give legal advice to very important people who are there. Now, if you happen to be executive at CNN and you happen to, let's say, take legal consult from a Chris Cuomo at some point while he works there, it might be difficult for you to fire him because he's giving legal consult and PR consult about a sensitive issue to someone else. Because if you fire him, he might just bring up or leak that information to the media. And believe me, he in particular would not be above such a thing, in my opinion. So
now
you might notice this happening from time to time where you see, wow, this legal analyst is terrible on the air.
It's, you know, and what's weird is I have a very specific example of this happening.
Really? Maybe multiple examples.
No, one really.
Okay. The point
one
is
really, man, let me just see if it's the same one you're thinking of.
I can think of a couple.
Okay.
And I'm sure one of them is this. There's no reason to go into specifics on it at all. My point here is that this is a common occurrence and may be at play with both Jeffrey Toobin and Chris Cuomo, in my opinion.
Okay. In your opinion. I think that's crazy unless you know what has happened to us.
Well, again, I
Where I was doing an interview with said legal analyst, that is not said, we taped it in advance, and it was one that was suggested that he was a good guy to go to, and I ripped him to shreds, I think I threw him out of my studio, okay, if I remember right, did I?
Something like that.
Yeah, I threw him out of the studio and said... Because I said to him during the interview, are you out of your mind?
Yeah.
What are you thinking? Mm-hmm. That is completely, and it was just odd.
Mm-hmm.
And I threw him out and he said, do you realize who I am? I don't give a crap who you are. That strangely never aired. there was somebody in the control room that said, that is not ever airing. And we realized that's why that guy sucks so much and is still on the air.
So these things do
happen. Occur.
And look, I think it's possible Chris Cuomo has finally pushed far enough to, for whatever protection he's been able to acquire over the years. It may not be able to protect him anymore. I mean, this is so far over the line, not even just as a journalist, but as a human being. I mean, this is so far over the line. So maybe CNN will act here. But if they don't, I will have a couple of guesses as to what is occurring.
So, you know, it's weird, Stu.
Mm.
And I feel bad for Chris Cuomo at this point.
Do you?
I do, because... he's not the Godfather. He's Fredo. So let me just say this to Fredo. If they invite you to go fishing on a lake, don't do it. I just want to offer that little bit of advice. Don't go fishing with your brother's friend. Just throwing that out. By the way, today is Giving Tuesday. We gorged ourselves with Thanksgiving and then Black Friday and then Cyber Monday. Can you think about someone else other than yourself for just a second? So it's Giving Tuesday today. This is actually the biggest day for nonprofits to be able to get people to give. I don't know why. It's not like... It's not like if I heard me talking about it, me, and I know me.
Yeah.
It's not like if I heard me talking about it in my car that I'd be like, you know what? This is exactly the day I'm going to give. I don't know why this has become a big deal.
It's cool, though.
But cool. It's really great. It's really great. Today, if you are feeling generous. No. Let me say it this way. You are feeling generous. You are thinking about giving lots of money to Mercury One.
I should give lots of money to Mercury One.
You are thinking, I should get on the internet right now.
I like the internet. I'm going to get on the internet right
and
now.
And go to mercuryone.org.
Mercuryone.org. org. Oh, there it is.
When I snap my fingers, you're going to put everything you have into that little donation box.
Everything.
And you will forget we ever had this conversation.
Okay. I just don't.
Anyway, so it's Giving Tuesday.
I need a raise. I have no more money.
What happened?
I gave it all away to Mercury One. They do such
Damn,
important work. Did you know that?
Work. It did. He remembered. But you still feel good, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. Mercury One. Go to mercuryone.org right now and help in many, many of the projects, you know, feeding people, preserving and teaching history, and helping rescue slaves all around the world.